The headlines: Yemen's Ansarullah movement slams as a terrorist policy. A U.S. decision to blacklist the group, saying that it reserves the right to respond. Washington's mayor asked for increased security around the inauguration of U.S. President-elect Joe Biden after last week's storming of Capitol Hill by Donald Trump supporters. And Iran says the seizure of a South Korean-flagged tanker in the Persian Gulf must not be politicized after the U.S. and France called for Tehran to release the ship. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital of Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has described the U.S. as the source of terrorism after Washington announced a plan to put the group on its terror list. Muhammad Ali al-Houthi, a member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, says that Ansarullah reserves the right to respond to the move. The U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the designation will take effect on January 19. Pompeo has accused the movement of destabilizing the region and obstructing a peaceful solution to the conflict. The Houthis took control of the capital Sana'a and much of Yemen's north in 2014 after the then-government resigned. A year later, Saudi Arabia and some of its allies launched an air campaign to oust the group. The Saudi-led aggression has left tens of thousands of civilians dead. Yemeni activist and political commentator Hossein Al-Bukhaiti says the U.S. decision to blacklist the Ansarullah movement won't affect the resistance against Washington-backed Saudi aggression against the country.
It's very clear that this kind of decision actually will not affect the Sana'a government as well, especially will not affect Ansarullah, as they call them, the Houthi, because Yemen has been under blockade for 6 years. Airport and port are closed, and here the forces and the Sana'a army depend on weapons that they have from the previous regime, and as well they have developed many weapons. So this kind of decision actually will only affect Saudi Arabia, because they think this decision will give now a chance for the military wing in Sana'a to take action, because for the last 6 years it was the political wing of the government here in Sana'a who had the upper hand in making decision, and I believe now the time has come for military wing to take action, and they can stop the war by directly targeting Saudi Arabia and targeting United Arab Emirates. And this decision, it just shows that the United States policy in the region and how Trump actually dealing with the effort that has been Martin Griffith has been trying to do.
The United States blacklisting of the chairman of Iraq's popular mobilization units has drawn fierce condemnations from officials in the Arab country and even beyond. The latest move, however, has made it abundantly clear that Washington's sanctions are following a predictable pattern to sanction officials from countries in West Asia that resist U.S. policies.
On Friday, the United States imposed sanctions on chairman of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Faleh al-Fayyad, accusing him of human rights abuses during anti-government demonstrations in the Arab country in late 2019. Iraq's foreign ministry slammed as unacceptable the U.S. Treasury Department's blacklisting of the 64-year-old. The ministry said it will carefully pursue all decisions made by the Treasury against Iraqi figures during both the current and the incoming U.S. administrations and will attempt to address the ramifications. Meanwhile, the leader of the Islamic Supreme Council of Iraq also issued a statement strongly denouncing the new U.S. sanctions as a blatant violation of his country's sovereignty. The move also drew condemnations from Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansarullah movements. In a statement, Hezbollah said the new sanctions are the latest entry in the list of U.S. crimes against the Iraqi government and people, while Ansarullah deemed the sanctions as another sign of Washington's animosity toward the Arab nation.
So when the United States now sees that the Ashtar Sha'abi, the popular mobilization forces in Iraq, are, even though they are led by an established politician, a well-respected political leader with a long state of service that is now the chairman of the Hashd al-Sha'abi, despite all of this, the United States will still consider this person to be a potential threat. However, from the perspective of the United States, the U.S. imperialist perspective, the Hashd al-Shaab presents a domestic and a homegrown, purely Iraqi domestic resistance against terrorism, but also against imperialism, against foreign hegemony, and against, you know, attempts to overtake the country and to make Iraq into a puppet state, as it sort of was in the first few years after the 2003 invasion.
The Ansarullah movement voiced confidence that the sanctions would not affect the Iraqi people's will to free their homeland and drive the occupying forces out of the country.
The U.S. sanctions against the PMU chairman are considered as being illegal. Faleh Al-Fayyad, head of the pro-government Popular Mobilization Units in the capacity as chairman, is part of Iraq's National Armed Forces. But it appears that the U.S. would stop at nothing to pressure the Iraqi group. The U.S. Department of Treasury has also imposed new sanctions on officials of Iraqi resistance groups. The latest U.S. sanctions, however, were not unexpected. In recent months, Washington has increasingly targeted individuals who, in one way or another, represent the resistance front against the U.S. hegemony and Israeli aggression, like Hamas, Hezbollah, and even Iranian officials.
The PMU celebrated its leader being hit by U.S. sanctions, saying it's an honor for the Iraqi official to be viewed as one of Washington's enemies, alongside Iran and Iraq's top commanders who were assassinated in a drone strike ordered by President Donald Trump. The PMU was formed by popular volunteer forces in 2014 after the Daesh terror group launched a campaign of bloodshed and destruction against Iraq. The group played a major role in pushing back and ultimately defeating the terrorist forces, which had taken control of large swathes of the Arab country. The Iraqi parliament voted to integrate the PMU into the Iraqi military in 2016, effectively placing the force under the command of Prime Minister and granting the group a standing similar to that of other branches of Iraqi security forces. But even that hasn't kept the U.S. from putting extra pressure on the group, similar to any other forces that stand against Washington's hegemony in the region.
Indeed, despite the fact that the United States, they talk a lot about the war on terror ever since the Bush era, but in reality we have seen that the United States arms and supports terrorist organizations all over the globe. This goes from Colombian drug lords to Salafi, Wahhabi, Takfiri gangs in Iraq, to ethnic supremacists trying to break apart the nations of Iran and Pakistan, for example. This is a global campaign of support to real terrorists, and at the same time, a campaign of targeting, assassinating, and attacking, slandering, and trying to imprison people who actually fight against these terrorists.
But the U.S. actions against the resistance in the region are provoking their correspondent reactions. Anti-U.S. sentiment in West Asia is on the rise, with more people calling for the ouster of U.S. from West Asia by the day.
Iran says the seizure of a South Korean flag tanker in the Persian Gulf must not be politicized after the U.S. and France called for Tehran to release the ship.
We have repeatedly said to South Korea and the intervening parties, whether they are the United States or France, that the case does not concern them at all, and that they will not help to solve a technical problem if they politicize it.
Khatib Zadeh also noted that the South Korean side had questions about technical problems related to the ship, which were answered. His comments come as South Korean Deputy Foreign Minister Choi Jong-kun is in Tehran for a long-planned visit. He's held talks with the Iranian Foreign Minister regarding the release of the vessel. The tanker was seized last week upon an Iranian court order for, quote, repeated infringements of maritime environmental laws in the Persian Gulf waters. The court is currently investigating the case. Iranian officials have time and again blamed Israel for assassinating the country's nuclear scientist. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, who was killed in November, was the latest nuclear scientist to fall victim to such assassination attacks. Families of the victims have now filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for supporting Israel over such murders. The lawyer of the victims' families has expounded on the lawsuit.
This has been, of course, the lawsuit had to be filed by the families. That's the legal procedure when there is the compensation aspect. The governments do not interfere, and the individuals must actually pursue such cases. We have started this process almost 1.5 years ago, and with the repetition of these assassination cases, that further motivated the families to file the lawsuit. And at the time of the martyrdom of Mr. Fakhrizadeh, we had actually made almost 90% progress. Speaking of the feedback of a legal procedure will be effective throughout the world, at least we hope that it will contribute to deterrence and also an act of condemnation. And this will please and create hope amongst the justice seekers throughout the world. We are witnessing changes made to certain realities by the Westerners. This documentation and issuance of the court ruling can actually register such a file in the international community so that in the future one will not witness a distortion of these facts.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. Hello, welcome to the news review. U.S. officials say that 25 domestic terrorism cases have been opened regarding last week's attack on Capitol building by supporters of President Donald Trump. Pentagon official says that there is concern that military members may have been involved in the protests. The Pentagon is asked to reveal all members who will be part of the security detail for the January 20 inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. Washington's mayor has called for increased security around the upcoming ceremony. She made the call in a letter to the Homeland Security Department, slamming the insurrection on Capitol Hill as an unprecedented terrorist attack. 5 people, including a Capitol officer, were killed in the incident. Walter Smolarek is editor at Liberation News, joining us from Philadelphia. We also have Keith Preston, independent journalist and researcher, joining us from Richmond. Welcome to you both. Walter Smolarek, let me first start with you. Tell us the definition of insurrection and whether that applies to what we saw transpire on Capitol Hill.
Well, I think that is an accurate way to describe it. I mean, an insurrection is popularly understood as an attempt to overthrow a government by force, and I think that's absolutely what the intention was. I mean, there's an effort by some sectors of the political establishment to focus solely on the actions of the mob, of the far-right, pro-Trump, some would say fascist mob that seized the Capitol. And that's very important, you know, how they were organized, how they were agitated by Donald Trump, you know, dispatched to the Capitol by Trump. But this, there are very strong indications that what happened involves a significant degree of collaboration, collusion with important sectors of both the Capitol Police and the military establishment and the Pentagon. So I think this was a serious attempt to overthrow the government. I mean, when you look at the rioters brought zip ties, right? They brought like makeshift handcuffs to potentially take prisoners, take hostages. They were allowed inside the building by the Capitol Police. The Capitol Police was perfectly capable of keeping them out, but they chose not to, or at least elements of the Capitol Police chose not to. And the rioters also had obviously very detailed maps. You know, the U.S. Capitol building is notoriously difficult to get around. People who work there say that a lot. But in a very short period of time, the far right mob was able to locate key offices that were not like the main offices of different political figures. So they were very well prepared for this. It's inconceivable that the authorities were unaware that there were plans in place to seize the Capitol building and disperse Congress. And yet, the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, refused to allow the deployment of the National Guard, both the D.C. Guard and now we know from the governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, the Maryland Guard as well, to put down the insurrection. So absolutely, I think this was a serious attempt to overturn the election and make sure that Donald Trump remains in office despite having lost.
So, look, Keith Preston, if we were to take a look at January 20th, there's still some that are saying it's not over, that on January 20th there's going to be some kind of, I'm not sure what to call it, a protest movement that to occur to perhaps stop the inauguration in one form or another. I mean, after all, I don't know why they're not calling it a terrorism alert when you have such a word of caution, to say the least, to come out for that day. Are we looking at a movement here that is not going to stop, basically portrayed by Trump supporters, that may also then lead to divisions, further divisions within the U.S.?
Well, no, I don't think this movement is going anywhere anytime soon. If anything, I think it's just getting started. I think that it has certainly exacerbated divisions in American politics to a whole new level. One thing that needs to be pointed out is that back during the summer when we had the mass protests and riots going on related to issues involving police brutality, you had a lot of groups from the far right that adopted the slogan Blue Lives Matter, and they presented themselves as supporters of the police and those kinds of things. Now we've seen a sharp break between the so-called far right on one hand and the police on the other. Increasingly, we're starting to see the far right develop a point of view that is hostile to law enforcement. And as far as the incident at the Capitol on January 6th, I think there were certainly people there involved in that effort that wanted to overthrow the government and were hoping for that kind of an insurrection. Whether the entire incident counts as a insurrection, I think, is a little bit more questionable. It seems more like a riot, but there were certainly individuals there that wanted to overthrow the government, as there typically are in most political riots. And I do think that it's quite possible that this kind of activity is going to escalate, because remember, on the day of the riot at the Capitol, we also saw similar episodes at the state capitals in a number of different states as well. So this was a movement that was coordinated nationwide, or almost nationwide. This wasn't just an isolated group of people. These protests were going on all over the place. Now, we can make distinctions, perhaps, between different types of participants. You have some people that aren't necessarily into doing something violent, but they do believe that the election was stolen from their side. Or you have other people, perhaps, who are more extreme, who belong to this QAnon cult and see this as some kind of conspiracy or whatever. So there are nuances among people who hold to that point of view or who support the president. But it's clear that this movement is growing, and it's clear that it's becoming more extreme over time. And this culmination of what we've seen so far was on January 6th, and I don't see that going away. Now, it's also likely that state security forces are going to be much more diligent about this in the future, I think, in the sense that they're going to be, I expect the Biden administration to initiate a kind of crackdown on domestic terrorism.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Walter Simularik, editor at Liberation News in Philadelphia. Keith Preston, a pleasure. Independent journalist and researcher.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
On Wednesday, 6th of January 2021, a day the world will not soon forget, hundreds of supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump besieged the U.S. Capitol in a serious attempt to overturn the result of the controversial election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as the next president and vice president of the United States. We now present you an article written by Kelebogil Zabobko under the heading, "This Is Not Who We Are, Is a Great American Myth." The article has been taken from foreignpolicy.com website. Please stay with us for more of Kelebogil Zabobgo's article. George Floyd was killed by U.S. police officers in Minneapolis, Minnesota, after allegedly using a counterfeit $20 bill at a neighborhood store. Breonna Taylor was killed in her home by police officers while sleeping in Louisville, Kentucky. Ahmed Aubrey was lynched by a trio of neighborhood vigilantes whilst jogging in Glynn County, Georgia. In 2020, Americans protesting structural racism and anti-black violence with tear gas, pepper spray, pelted with rubber bullets, misrepresented as threats to the public peace, and subjected to arbitrary arrests in cities across the United States. Then, on Wednesday, 6th of January 2021, a day the world will not forget soon, hundreds of supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump besieged the U.S. Capitol building in a serious attempt to overturn the result of the controversial election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as the next president and vice president of the United States. After rushing doors, breaking windows, and charging through the halls of Congress, the insurrectionists sat in the Senate president's seat, put their feet up on the House Speaker's desk, ransacked congressional offices, and defaced statues. The consequences? A remarkably small number of arrests and even some selfies with security officers. The recent events reflect a double standard between how law enforcement responds to different groups based on their race. Last year, Black Lives Matter protesters were overwhelmingly peaceful, but were subject to ill treatment by the authorities and smeared as rioters and looters. By contrast, some conservative politicians and news media have denied, excused, and even defended the pro-Trump insurrectionists who attempted to seize the citadel of U.S. supposed democracy and managed to walk away from the scene. Policymakers, academics, and citizens have long decried the discrepancy in the treatment of black people and people of color more generally in comparison to white people in the United States. In policing, employment, housing, healthcare, and many other areas, this inequality has adverse consequences for democracy. It sharpens social cleavages, normalizes the marginalization of certain groups, and limits the full and equal participation of all the peoples in political, economic, and social life of the United States. The anti-democratic behavior and racism that have defined the Trump era should be addressed through transitional justice. First, so that Americans can develop a shared understanding of their political past and present. And second, so that there can be justice for all. Over the last few days, the U.S. media and political leaders have repeated the refrains, "This is not who we are," and "This is not America," again and again. This is not who we are. This is not America. To the contrary, this is in fact and in essence America. But a foundational flaw in the U.S. national project is its citizens' inability to unite around a common understanding of reality, notably in terms of structural racism and systemic injustice. This divide increasingly falls along partisan lines. The recent assault on the Capitol building shows that it is well past time for the United States to confront its troubling past and present. It is well past time for transitional justice to address discrimination, to address violence and abuse of power by government and non-government actors alike. While transitional justice is often applied by governments in new democracies and post-conflict countries, the framework could prove valuable in the United States, which has a long list of unaddressed violence and abuse, generally connected to racism and other systems of oppression. Transitional justice can help the United States address two pressing issues simultaneously, that is, anti-democratic behavior and historical and contemporary racism. Donald Trump and his enablers catalyzed the anti-democratic riot at the Capitol after months of peddling claims about illegal votes, faulty voting machines, and ballot theft and disposal. Ethnic antagonism among many Republicans underlies these attacks. Republicans are overwhelmingly white, report being concerned about the growing presence and political power of Americans of color and their demands for a more free, more just and equitable society. In a national survey conducted in January of 2020, political scientist Larry Bartels found that 51% of surveyed Republicans believe that the traditional American way of life is disappearing so fast that they may have to use force to save it. 47% agreed that strong leaders sometimes have to bend the rules in order to get things done. And 41% agreed that a time will come when patriotic Americans have to take the law into their own hands. These figures may be even higher now. Transitional justice could address these beliefs in part by punishing those who have taken the law into their own hands and deterring those who would do so in the future. As part of a transitional justice response to anti-democratic actions, elected U.S. officials must dispense with theories of election fraud, and those who have encouraged them should be held accountable under the law. When the Democratic-controlled Congress convenes after the inauguration on 20th of January, it should begin hearings on election disinformation. All federal office holders who contributed to election disinformation and who incited violence, including Donald Trump, and the 147 Republicans who voted to overturn the election should be served with congressional subpoenas that compel them to testify under oath at risk of perjury to the purported truth. The 2020 election was safe, it was secure, and free and fair. Their constituents should hear the truth from them directly. Should subpoenaed individuals fail to comply or lie under oath, the punishment is very simple. They should be indicted and tried for obstructing justice and lying to Congress. Wednesday, 6th of January's insurrectionists and all who engage in similar violent acts with the intention to upend the so-called democracy should also be arrested, charged, and tried. Otherwise, Americans will likely see similar assaults on democracy in the coming weeks, months, and years. The U.S. Congress should also seek to curtail presidential pardon powers so that leaders cannot pardon themselves, their relatives, or their close associates. Self-serving pardon powers have become a definite feature of the Trump administration, and many Trump allies are banking on being pardoned for misdeeds carried out in his service. Second, to confront America's racist past and present, the country could turn to a truth commission, such as one sponsored by Representative Barbara Lee and Senator Cory Booker, to establish certain basic facts for the nation. Systemic inequality is a defining feature of American democracy, as is white privilege. Both explain disparities in U.S. political, economic, and social life, including how demonstrators are portrayed and treated by law enforcement officers. Whether through a truth commission or through another set of congressional hearings, the United States must dispense with whataboutism and a false equivalencies drawn between social movements such as the Black Lives Matter movement and the rioters at the Capitol. It is essential to clarify that, whilst the Black Lives Matter promotes racial equality and inclusion, Donald Trump's Make America Great Again movement focuses on white supremacy and on exclusion. Last summer's Black Lives Matter protesters were lawful and motivated by noble goals such as ending police brutality and impunity for perpetrators of racial violence. The pro-Trump insurrection, though, was at its core violent and illegal, and it was motivated by an ignoble goal: undermining democracy and subverting the will of an increasingly diverse people. The Biden administration and the new session of Congress must quickly counter the attacks on democracy and on marginalized groups that have characterized the Trump presidency. The time for truth and the time for justice is right now.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. Please stay tuned.
یک آیه دیگه هم در اینجا عرض میکنیم با اون آیه مبارکه اینه که فرماید اعوذ بالله من الشیطان.
In آیه 152 of سوره البقره we read, remember me and I will remember you, and thank me and do not be ungrateful to me. In this verse of the Holy Quran, remembrance of Allah means that we in every aspect of our lives pay attention to Allah and His signs in our lives. It also means to be attentive to things which help us to remember Allah, such as the Holy Quran and the infallible Imams. In better words, everything which can be considered a means to connect us to Allah must be taken care of. The answer to our remembrance of Allah is He remembering us, and this is great reward for Muslims. Now, how Allah will remember His servants. Some scholars believe that Allah will send His special blessings upon the servants who remember Him frequently. Thus, know that whenever someone remembers Allah in every action in life, in answer, Allah will remember that person too. And Allah is grateful to those who are thankful towards Him. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Khalaf Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en Khalaf Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Huddled in a command center on Wednesday afternoon, 6th of January, Mayor Muriel Bowser of Washington and her aides saw a photograph of bloodstains on the temporary grandstands at the Capitol, a makeshift structure built for the inauguration of a new president in 2 weeks' time. The enormity of the deadly failure then sank in. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Mark Mazzetti, Helen Cooper, Jennifer Steinhauer, Zolan Cano-Young, and Luke Broadwater. The piece is titled Inside a Deadly Siege, How a String of Failures Led to a Dark Day at the Capitol. Stay with us for more. Huddled in a command center on Wednesday afternoon, 6th of January, Mayor Muriel Bowser of Washington and her aides saw a photograph of bloodstains on the temporary grandstands at the Capitol, a makeshift structure built for the inauguration of a new president in 2 weeks' time. It was then that the enormity of the deadly failure sank in. Rioters had broken through the thin police line on the Capitol steps and were descending on hundreds of lawmakers conducting the ceremonial quadrennial act of certifying the presidential vote, and the mayor and her aides were not able to stop the attack. Muriel Bowser and her police chief called the Pentagon asking for additional D.C. National Guard troops to be mobilized to support what officials were realizing was inadequate protection at the Capitol. but they were told that the request would first have to come from the Capitol Police. In a call to Chief Stephen Sund of the Capitol Police, they learned that his force was under siege, lawmakers were being rushed to safety, and rioters were overrunning anyone in authority. He kept repeating the same phrase, "The situation is dire." Cutting through the crosstalk, one person on the call posed a blunt question. "Chief Sund, are you requesting National Guard troops on the grounds of the Capitol?" There was a pause. "Yes," Chief Sund replied, "I am." Yet the Capitol Police and the city's Metropolitan Police had rebuffed offers days before for more help from the National Guard beyond the relatively modest contingent to provide traffic control, so no additional troops had been placed on standby. It took just over 4 hours for them to arrive. It was just one failure in a dizzying list that day, and during the weeks leading up to it, that resulted in the first occupation of the United States Capitol since British troops set the building ablaze during the War of 1812. But the death and destruction this time was caused by Americans, rallying behind the inflammatory language of an American president who refused to accept the will of more than 81 million other Americans who had voted him out of office. President Donald Trump's call at a rally that day for the crowd to march on the nearby Capitol building was surely a spark that helped ignite the deadly riots that left 5 people dead, including a policeman and a woman who stormed the building, injured dozens of others, and damaged the country's reputation for carrying out peaceful transfers of power. But the tinder for the blaze had been gathering for months, with every tweet that the election had been stolen, every refusal by Republican lawmakers to recognize Joseph Biden as the next president, every dog whistle call that emboldened white supremacist groups to violently strike. A full reckoning will take months or even years, and many lawmakers have called for a formal commission to investigate the events of that day. But an initial anatomy of the siege by the New York Times revealed numerous failures. The chaos showed that government agencies have no coordinated plan to defend against an attack on the Capitol building, especially one specifically aimed at powerful elected officials. Though law enforcement agencies have for years raised alarms about the growing threat of domestic terrorism. QAnon, an online conspiracy group that was well represented among the crowd, has been labeled as a domestic terrorist threat by the FBI. Federal agencies and the Capitol Police appeared to issue no serious warnings in the days leading up to the riots that the gathering could turn violent, despite countless posts on right-wing social media sites pledging confrontation and even bloodshed. The Department of Homeland Security invited local law enforcement agencies to its Situation Room, held online during the pandemic only the day before the riots, which some security experts said was far too late. Poor planning and communication among a constellation of federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies hamstrung the response to the rioting on 6th of January. Once the Capitol building was breached, a patchwork group of reinforcements was forced to try to navigate a labyrinthine complex of unfamiliar passages and byways that would prove dangerous. Above all, the fiasco demonstrated that government agencies were not prepared for a threat that, until recently, seemed unimaginable. When the person inciting the violence is actually the President of the United States. The Capitol Police and the Metropolitan Police Department did not respond to requests for comment. Muriel Bowser's Chief of Staff, John Fossicchio, said that defense officials determined the number of personnel deployed, but Pentagon officials said they made those decisions based on specific requests that they received. The recriminations began almost immediately, and the violence also carried a sobering reality. The country got lucky. Hundreds of rioters carrying weapons breached the seat of American government, some with the clear intent of injuring, holding hostage, or even killing federal officials to stop them from certifying the vote. In the end, all of the lawmakers were spirited away to safety. It was such an embarrassingly bad failure and immediately became an infamous moment in American history, according to R.P. Eddy, a former American counterterrorism official and diplomat who now runs a private intelligence firm. R.P. Eddy added, "But it could have been so much worse. The Capitol is our goal. Everything else is a distraction," announced one post on far-right social media just the day before the uprising. "Every corrupt member of Congress locked in one room and surrounded by real Americans is an opportunity that will never present itself again." That was just one example of how extremists were organizing on social media. In private Facebook groups, activists planning to make the trip to the Capitol discussed not only logistics like hotels and ride shares, but also sleeping in cars and pitching tents should they need to occupy the city. Many comments included photographs of guns and ammunition that they planned to bring to Washington. On smaller social media platforms such as Parler and Gab that became rallying places for the far right, calls for violence were more overt. Dozens of posts in the days leading up to Wednesday, 6th of January, listed assault rifles and other weapons that people claimed they were bringing to Washington. People discussed which types of ammunition were best and whether medics would be in place for those potentially injured. Law enforcement officers and other officials were aware of the chatter and took some steps to try to reduce the chances of violence. The Department of Homeland Security officials put tactical agents on standby in downtown Washington. The FBI questioned neo-Nazis who were under investigation and planning to attend the demonstrations, prompting some of them to change their plans and skip the trip, according to officials. And on Monday, the Metropolitan Police Department arrested Enrique Tarrio, the leader of the Proud Boys, a far-right extremist group. The police also announced before the rally that anyone who planned to show up to the demonstrations armed in violation of local firearms laws would be arrested. But missed opportunities abounded on that day. Despite the ominous social media posts, officials leading intelligence sharing centers throughout the United States received no warnings from the federal government about the potential threat to the Capitol building. "We did not see any federal products related to this," said Mike Senna, the president of the National Fusion Center Association. Such centers were formed after the 11th of September 2001 attacks to improve communication and planning among federal and local agencies. One senior federal prosecutor in the Midwest said he did not even speak with a top FBI agent in his city about local residents possibly traveling to Washington on 6th of January. What the FBI has been observing online, officials would later say, amounted to First Amendment protected activity, despite the incendiary language in social media posts. Meanwhile, intelligence experts have denounced the inability or refusal of government analysts to provide proper warning about impending violence. The evidence is starkly clear that the momentum of violence has shifted to the right in this country. "We've seen this in city after city," said E.P. Eddy. "There was a failure among law enforcement to imagine that people who look like me would do this." Chase Jennings, a spokesman for the Homeland Security Department, said in the days leading up to the breach at the Capitol building, the agency had opened channels with partners and shared information on those channels. Looming over preparation was the government's heavy-handed response to the Black Lives Matter demonstrations over the summer. President Donald Trump had deployed unidentified agents and tactical teams to the streets of Washington last June against the wishes of Mayor of Washington Muriel Bowser, and agents tear-gassed protesters, allowing the president to walk to a nearby church and stage a photo opportunity holding a Bible. In the run-up to the violence on Wednesday, 6th of January, the fractured relationship between federal and local law enforcement agents was evident. Washington's Mayor Muriel Bowser had sent a letter to top federal law enforcement officials on Tuesday, warning against excessive deployment. Though the city had sought some National Guard troops for traffic control, she noted that the Washington, D.C. police had not requested additional personnel from law enforcement agencies for the rallies on Wednesday, 6th of January, and referred to the aggressive deployment last June. Still, federal law enforcement officials conveyed to lawmakers that they were prepared. David Bowditch, the FBI deputy director, assured Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, the top Democrat in the Senate Intelligence Committee, that the FBI had the resources to handle the Trump rally on Wednesday, 6th of January.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a televised speech delivered on July 31st, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of Eid al-Adha.
In the present time, a component manufacturer movement has fortunately been launched with which they are building very sensitive and delicate components for various machines. If they had given them to us in the first place, no one would have thought of building them inside the country. If factory owners needed them, they would go and import them into the country. However, when they cannot import them from the outside, they refer to universities and research centers, asking them to do their best and to build the components for them. Therefore, by Allah's favor and grace, we have managed to utilize the sanctions in the service of the scientific blossoming of the country. This was the third point.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
Fourth point is that, as I said before, sanctions have not paid off. That is to say, the enemy failed to attain his goal by imposing them. What is the reason for that? The reason is the important projects that were carried out in the country during the time of sanctions. For example, several thousand knowledge-based companies were established in the country. This is a huge breakthrough. It is evident that the scientific and economic movement of the country has gained its momentum. Before the imposition of these harsh sanctions, we did not have these several thousand knowledge-based companies. Another achievement is the Persian Gulf Star Refinery, which was established by the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. IRGC. It is a great and manifest feat which was accomplished during and despite sanctions. People throughout the world are impressed at this achievement.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.